Howdy folks, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. It is September 19, 2016. It's been quite some time since I've done a podcast, so I do apologize. If you are watching on YouTube, the full podcast can be found at inthebluespodcast.com. We can type it into iTunes, In the Blues, or into any podcatcher, and you'll find the podcast. So thanks so much for having to listen to the podcast. I absolutely appreciate it. And for those watching on YouTube, how you doing? So the first thing I want to let everybody know about is my new album is finished. It took from the start of this year till September to get finished. I worked on it pretty hard the first few months, and then the last few months was basically, or the majority of the time, was me improving the vocal takes and learning how to sing better. So a huge thanks to my friend Brian for helping me out with that and being honest and brutally honest, which is what you need when you do these projects. So I thought I'd have a bit of a talk about the recording process, what goes into it, and a little bit about the album as well, and where you can get it, and all that kind of stuff. So this started on a bit of a whim. I had some creative spurts over a two-day period. So I tracked 11 songs in my computer back here, and I put them all to a click track and arranged them and just played acoustic or electric guitar. And just put down whatever I thought sounded good at the time. I had a few grooves in my head. I was really, really inspired to play some different music. And I think that's why this album came up so great. It's a real Americana kind of sound. It's got that Tulsa vibe. For those who don't know what the Tulsa vibe is, it's the J.J. Cale sound, Mark Knopfler sound, Eric Clapton's sort of non-blues sound. So think, you know, Ocean Boulevard's, that album, something like that. Or any of J.J. Cale's tunes. You know, it's that laid-back kind of groovy stuff. This particular album, I hired a guy from Michigan called Paul Hilton, who is a pedal steel player, and he was phenomenal. He's also a session guy, like a real session muso. He can play any style of music and do it exceptionally well. And not only that, he's an engineer as well, like me. So I sent him the tracks, and he sent me back his pedal steel part. And it was phenomenal. It completely changed and opened up a whole new dimension to my music, which was unbelievable. So a huge thanks to Paul Hilton. He's probably not watching this, but if he is, thank you so much. You did an amazing job. And I had Brian Strafford playing electric guitar, slide guitar, and doing harmonies as well. So the vocals really sound strong on this album. I'm really proud of it. It doesn't have as much guitar noodling as my other albums. It's still pretty heavily guitar based, but it's more song orientated. So think, I guess, Sailing to Philadelphia by Mark Knopfler. That's another influenced sound of what I was trying to go for with this album. There's ended up, I scrapped two songs and we made it 9 tracks, and they all sound great. It's funny, every time I do one of these projects, I'm really scared I'm not going to be able to top the one before it in terms of production quality. The songs is a subjective thing. Some people like songs on one album more than they like the other one. In my own opinion, and sort of in my heart, I know this album is my strongest yet. I would put it on par with Another Rainy Day, which was a pretty strong album in terms of originality. You know, songwriting sort of helped shape a sound that took me to where I am today. And this new one is no exception. It's going to be the new sound, and it may lead to other areas as well. So it has a bit of blues, it has a bit of country, believe it or not, it's that country influence, that Tulsa sound. They always say Tulsa music's not country, not blues, not jazz, not rock and roll. It's like this merge of all of these different styles. And that's what I was kind of going for, this just a different sound, something that's not as guitar intensive, but still has great grooves. And the lyrics, I guess this time I intentionally wrote them to be a little more universal than all the stuff that was just going on in my life. And I think some people will hopefully be able to relate to that. Of course, there's definitely some songs on here that were inspired from personal, you know, things I went through, things I did, all that kind of stuff. So it's sung very differently to anything I've done. Some of it is almost very, very quiet and close to the mic, getting that big, round, full sound, which was inspired from actually seeing Clapton and J.J. Cale work on the Road to Escondido album. A lot of their vocals was nice and soft, really close to the mic, gives you a nice, big, full sound. So I've done some of that, and some of it I really pushed my range really high and really low. So I'm pretty confident this stuff should go over pretty well. If you want to get a sample, you can go over to shanesband.com, click on the music tab, and load up a SoundCloud player. And the first song is called The Reason for My Blues. It's a song that I played with the band on live to air recently on 3MDR Radio. And they got calls, which was pretty rare for them. That people were really digging it. So once the album's finished, well, it's finished, but once I get it in my hand next week, or this week coming up, I should say, I think I'm going to pick it up Friday, all being well, then I'll be able to do a live-to-air, sort of have a chat, I'll play some music, and we'll talk about the album. So that should be fun. And yeah, so it's an exciting project to get done. A huge shout-out to my friend Jeff Stokes, who played bass, Rowan Mumford on the keyboards. We've got a Hammond organ sound on there. It's phenomenal. Paul Hilton on the slide guitar, but pedal steel guitar. Brian Strafford, he's just amazing. And Drew Gamble, who did just some of the best drum tracks and most fitting drum tracks that could have happened for this type of album. He's a really great shuffle player, blues player, and his laid-back sort of vibe really suited what we were doing. So if you're a fan of sort of like the Van Morrison, the JJ Cale, the Mark Knopfler stuff, some of the Eric Clapton stuff, I think you're going to dig it. Eric Clapton also stated that J.J. Cale has influenced as many people as Jimi Hendrix. At the start, I thought, there's no way that's true. Like, Hendrix is just, you know, he's the guitar god. But then I thought about it more in terms of music, and J.J. Cale's inspired so many people, just so many people. I'm not going to say he's inspired more than Hendrix, but if you look through the music catalog, you'll see touches of J.J. Cale hitting a lot of albums over the years. So if you're not a fan of J.J. Cale or you haven't heard enough of his stuff, I'm not talking about Cocaine and After Midnight. Have a listen to some of his live albums. Have a listen to even some of his newer stuff up until before he died. And that Road to Escondido album he did with Clapton was amazing, and that was a huge influence on this album. I'm not going to go ahead and say there's a whole lot of chicken picking on this album. It's not that sort of thing. It's more still in the blues vein, but it just has a more singer-songwriter approach layered with guitars and pedal steel and organ. It's going to be a cool album. It's going to be a cool album. Whichever day it is I pick it up, I'm going to post a sample up on YouTube, or I may actually post it up on my band's page. I'm not too sure yet. I'm still indecisive about whether or not I'll have it on iTunes or just at my shop at intheblues.com.au. I know you can get some good deals through that DistroKid distribution thing. So I may do it. I don't want it on Spotify. Spotify is just a waste of time. So if I can just have it on like the major shops without Spotify, that's something I'll probably do. Spotify is only great if you're a really well-established artist and you've already got thousands or millions of, you know, fans out there, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Probably had like 25 million streams of their new album in the first month. So yeah, it's been a really cool project, and I'm glad I was able to top all of my other albums in terms of production. This one sort of mixed itself in some ways. We used all condenser microphones on everything. I used my Little Crow electric guitar for all of my electric guitar parts, apart from one song where I finished it up with the Strat and the Super Reverb. My guitar amp of choice was the Blues Deluxe on clean, semi-cranked on the clean channel just for a bit of dirt, and I pulled some great sounds using the Two Notes Torpedo Live, which is an amazing, amazing recording tool. If you're looking to get an awesome electric guitar tone, definitely check those things out. They sound fantastic. I think writing and recording your own songs is really important, not only to your own musical legacy, whatever that may be, but just in general. I think playing other people's songs forever, is there a lot of value in doing that? Even if you're not getting as many gigs playing your own music, there's people out there that will appreciate it and will like it. Bearing in mind, not every song you write will be good, but I'm still playing songs that I wrote very early on when I first started writing songs, and they've evolved over the years. I've also left out a lot of songs that I used to play because I really didn't feel like they were either relevant to right now, or they've been like superseded with other songs. I'm really happy I didn't go down the cover band road when I first started playing. I really liked blues, and that's kind of what I wanted to do. And I really liked other music like Dire Straits and so forth as well. I did learn quite a lot of songs over the years, but I'd never really feel the urge to play them live. I'd rather do something that's, you know, improvised, or at least a blues song that you can kind of make your own. One thing I've learned over the years about recording my own songs is how to arrange songs better the next time. And also where I need to improve, whether it be vocally, my guitar chops, my tone, all of this kind of stuff that I think about when I'm getting into the, you know, the mixing process and all that kind of stuff. I usually hear a lot of faults along the way when I first do my mix downs, and then I just go through with a pen and paper, mark down what I need to fix, and do it until I go blue in the face, or just try my best until I get it the way that I can at least listen to it back. I didn't use any auto-tune or anything on this album. I didn't want to use any of it. I just wanted to sing it the best that I could and get the best takes, and I really believe that I've done that. So the album will be called Shane DiOrio Band This Drive, and it's, like I said, influenced by that Americana Tulsa sound. It's probably a little more modern sounding than some of that old school stuff, but that said, it's definitely heavily inspired by it. So if you like JJ Cale, Mark Knopfler, Eric Clapton, and some Van Morrison style stuff, you're definitely going to dig it. I'll keep you all posted about the release of this, and I'll definitely put up a video on YouTube. And if you are watching on YouTube, let me know your thoughts on writing your own material versus playing other people's stuff. Cheers. This next section is for all the pedal guys out there, including myself. I had a little bit of a revelation last week, and I thought I would share this with you. It may sound a little hypocritical because demoing pedals is kind of what I do, but let me explain. So, I've been playing music live for a long, long time, and I've come to one big conclusion. For the sound I love, there's nothing better than a Tube Screamer. All of my favorite pedals over the years were either Tube Screamers or variations of a Tube Screamer, like the Sparkle Drive from Voodoo Lab. An amazing pedal. I also loved the Plimsoll pedal as well. Now, the reason why I'm gonna say the Tube Screamer sound is the best for me is because I've tried hundreds, maybe 1,000 pedals over the last 10 years, and I've never found any that stack better than a Tube Screamer. So what I mean by that is if you've got a Tube Screamer as your rhythm sound or your first dirty sound, you can then stack something before it or after it, and it just makes everything sound better. Just recently, I spent about 2 hours with the mindset of, I've got to change my tone, it's time for something new, let's see what I've got. So I pulled out about 40 pedals from my Overdrive collection, and I started stacking, and I started stacking, I started changing things around, and I went back to what I had. So for me now, I'm going to leave my live rig pretty much untouched. That's basically the Klon and a Maxon Tube Screamer. My other board is the Klon Central stuff, which is essentially the same thing, the Klon copy of the Centaur, and the Demon Tube Screamer, just fantastic. I love my analog delays and all that, so I'm just talking about in terms of overdrives. For me personally, it doesn't get much better than that, and I'll tell you why. A lot of guys will ridicule the Klon and they'll say, it sounds crap on its own, why do people like this thing? Well, the reason people like this thing is because A, it stacks great into another pedal, and it enhances the frequency that you need when you're playing live. It brings you up in the mix and out of the mix a whole lot better. Now, the Tube Screamer will do that. The Tube Screamer will give you more mids. It also shaves off a little bit of the top end, so you get more of this vintage sound, which is basically taking off a little bit of the high end. Also, maybe rounds out the bottom end a little bit too, so you lose a little bit of low end, but it's nothing much. You're not going to lose a lot. Now, when you stack the Klon into that, you get not only an enhanced upper mids frequency coming in, so you've got that mid bump of the Tube Screamer, then you've got the upper mids bump of the Klon. It also adds back a little bit of high end, so you don't get too much high end, you get just the perfect amount to my ear anyway. It's all subjective, everyone likes different tones, but I've never found two pedals that stack better than these two. I've tried lots and lots of pedals. I took another one out with me the other night, another boutique pedal I've never tried live, just another great pedal in my collection, and I didn't like it. Everything about the tone, once it was stacked, wasn't great. I gotta say, there's not many pedals that play well with others. If you don't have a Klon or you don't like that sound, another one is the Overzoid pedal from Svsound. That stacks extremely well into another pedal. But I've found very few of these mixed brand pedals stack really well together. It's just not how it works. Another great result I had was stacking the Klon or my green overdrive into my red Maxon overdrive. So that's the OD808X, I think it's called. So it's a red overdrive pedal. It doesn't have the mid bump and it works great with humbuckers. So for me, keeping it very simple is the way I'm going to go forward playing live. I'm not going to experiment too much anymore with my live rig unless something totally blows me away. The only thing I could ever see maybe changing and mixing from time to time, or mixing up from time to time, would be my tremolos and vibratone style effects and maybe a delay or wah pedal down the track. But my wah pedal, I love it. The GCB95F, I've had that for a long time. Still get a lot of comments on how great the wah sounds, and it's a bog standard. Well, it's not a bog standard one, but you can get them easy. It's just a GCB95F instead of a GCB95. I'm sent so many pedals and I'm really grateful for it. And they do, they sound great on their own and I'm usually pretty blown away. It's just that when I go to stack them with other pedals, they just don't always play great together. So that's one thing to keep in mind. If you've got a pedal combination that really works well and you've got two pedals that you can stack, for example, and you get a really nice sound, don't go messing with it. Worst thing you can do is think, this other pedal that I'm going to buy is going to sound great in my chain of effects, because a lot of the time they don't. If I had purchased a lot of these pedals, I would have been really dissatisfied and they probably would have gone on eBay once I tried them with my current rig. So keep that in mind. I think stacking pedals is a whole different thing to just buying one for something. If you're not stacking pedals, the best thing you could probably do is find the overdrive that you really like. And if you want to get a higher gain combination, just buy a distortion pedal. Find one that you really like, or maybe a Plimsoll or something in the middle ground, or an OCD that has that middle ground between overdrive and distortion, and that it can just be used on its own. You don't need to stack anything with it to get more gain. I hope this was somewhat insightful about looking for pedals and making sure that they play nicely with what you already have. If you are already happy, don't go messing with it. It's the worst mistake you can make. You might just get in a cycle of owning lots of pedals that don't play well with each other. And I should also point out, if you do get a chance to try these pedals in person, take your board to the shop. That's one thing I always used to do. So, and my guitars. So if I'm going to a shop to buy an amp, I take my rig, I take my pedal board, I take my guitar. I know what that's supposed to sound like through one of my amps that I use now. And then I test it accordingly. When I bought my Plimsoll for the first time, I had my other pedal board with me and I went, wow, this sounds really great with what I've already got. Let's just say this. You don't always have to go boutique to get great tone. You don't always have to go boutique to have two great pedals that work well together. I guess the Klon KTR, which is the production model that's currently out, would be considered a boutique model, but there's definitely alternatives to that as well. And you can use that to stack into most pedals. Let me just say this. Sometimes pedals on their own will never sound as good as what they could when you hear it in context to a band mix. That's where some of these things shine. So if you're happy with your sound, don't mess with it. Let me know your thoughts. This next topic was a request on one of my live streams, I think it was. Either that or I got a Facebook message asking me to talk about jam night etiquette. And I guess from a musical perspective more than anything else. We'll start there and then we'll go into some other things as well. So I've been going to jam nights for many, many years, and I've been to lots of jams both here in Australia and overseas in the United States. So I've played around, so to speak, and it's been a lot of fun on the most part. Now let's look at this from a guitar player's perspective, or maybe a guitar singer's perspective. Not so much the rhythm section stuff, because most of the people that watch these videos are predominantly guitar players. So we'll talk about the guitar player part first. Now, if you're not a singer, your basic job is to compliment whoever's singing and playing guitar. If there's two guitar players and a singer, you then have to work your way around in a different way. Now, let's take an example of one guitar player who's also a singer and quite competent, and then you jumping up with them trying to, you know, compliment the band. And I say compliment rather than just play over the top. So there's one thing I see a lot and it drives me nuts. There can be three guitar players on stage sometimes at a jam, and we'll just take a bumper bumper, you know, bumper 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 kind of blues. You got three guitar players doing exactly the same thing. So in my mind, musically, play something else. If there's only two guitar players and one person's doing the bumper bumper or the chunka chunka or the boom titty, you know, that's the country beat. Stay out the way of that. Play something else. And then when they go to do a solo, if they go to do a solo, you play the part they were playing if you can, or play something that approximates it. The worst thing is two guitar players doing the same thing in the same spot all night long. It just drives me nuts. It drives the other players nuts, the more experienced players as well. It's like, get out of the way a little bit. Play something that fits musically with what's going on rather than playing exactly the same thing. But like I said, if they go for a solo, then you've got the freedom to play their part, but don't overcrowd that same feel with guitars. It's not cool. It's just definitely think outside of that box. Don't play the same thing. Rule number two is don't noodle over everything. Don't solo over a vocal ever. Look, if the other guitarist isn't putting in any licks at all when he's singing, feel free to fill it out from time to time, but don't overdo it. Just fill stuff out. Think B.B. King. Put a little, you know, a little lick in here and there, but stay out of the way of the vocals. And my suggestion would be feel out the song, feel out where the vocals are going and fit within the mix. Just don't put your guitar on 10 and go for it. Like, feel out not only the phrasing style of the singer, but also feel out the volume as well. Another thing to be aware of is always look around. Look at the drummer, look at the bass player, and most importantly, look at the person who's leading the set. If you've got someone who has no concept of leading a set, you're in for a bit of bad luck, but that's just the way that that goes. If you're a guitarist and singer with some experience, or you're playing with someone with some experience, then it's going to be a whole lot better. They can help direct the band. Your job as the backup guitar player is never to lead the band unless the singer is looking for some sort of help. And that was just one of those things I've learned over the years. If there's one thing I can't stress enough, it's definitely play something different to the other guitarist, and also don't play over the vocals. That would be the two lessons that need to be learned early on. Now, if you're a great and you're a gun guitar player, you can sometimes get away with this stuff, but most singers won't want someone playing over the top of them. And even if they're not a great singer, it gets in the way. So keep that in mind. If you're just there playing guitar, you really need to leave that space and room for them to do their thing comfortably without feeling like they're fighting over the top of you. If you've never sung and played guitar live, they're directing everything. They're usually going to throw you a solo. They're going to solo. They're going to tell the band to bring it up and down, all that kind of stuff. So they're doing more than just singing and playing guitar. They're basically leading the set. So as the other guitarist, for example, definitely stay out of the way and compliment them. Even if you're a much stronger guitar player, pull back, play some stuff that's different. Make things sound better. When I play with less competent guitar players than myself who are singing and playing guitar, what I generally try to do, my challenge and my goal, is to make the set sound a whole lot better by doing things that would be less predictable in the set of music. Even if we're playing Rock Me Baby for the 9 millionth time, I'm thinking outside of the bag a little bit and I'm trying to put in feels and fills. They sound like the same word, but they're not. So feel, F-E-E-L, and fills with an I to basically make the song sound nicer. The other thing you have to take into consideration too is running a jam night, if it's really busy, isn't always easy. So if you're turning up to a place for the first time, you might not get the ideal set the first time. They don't know you, you don't know them. They might put you up with a bunch of duds, but once they hear you play, the next time you go, someone will go, hey, get him up with me, or get her up with me, or whatever. And the set will probably, you'll probably get bumped up knowing that them knowing that you can actually play. So be patient, and I don't think you'll always get the best set every week. This is how jams go. You can be, you know, in your own mind a great player, but it doesn't mean you're always going to get the ideal set. You might have a dud bass player. You might have a dud drummer 1 week. You might have a great set the week after. I usually say 1 in every 3 jam nights are usually pretty good if you're going there consistently, because you get to know the people, they get to know you, you get to know each individual styles and what you can play competently and all that kind of stuff and comfortably. And each, you know, it should get better and better over time. So my other suggestion is to be patient at jam nights and just know that you'll also need earplugs. you are watching on YouTube, let me know your thoughts if I've missed anything about jam night etiquette, and especially from a guitar player's perspective, let me know if there's anything that I've overlooked. And there's maybe just one other thing I should point out as well. Please bring your own gear. Not everyone wants everybody to use their amplifiers. All right, folks, please take note of this. This is a bit of a serious part of the podcast right now. I've just found a seller on eBay that is selling fake packaged D'Addario strings. Believe it or not, the cardboard looks legit. The packaging looks legit. When you scan the QR code, it doesn't work. Not only that, the strings don't feel like D'Addario strings, which they're clearly not. Now, my friend's been playing guitar for a lot longer than I have, probably 40 years. He's been buying the same strings for a long, long time. And he gave me a call to say, there's a seller on eBay Australia selling fake products. So I looked into it and I found out he was also selling some guitar cables that should have been branded where the actual jack is. Instead, they weren't, which was a dead giveaway. This guy's just repackaging junk. So he's got junk cables, junk strings that he's putting into some packaging, which looks legitimate, but isn't. To the untrained eye, this would catch a lot of people. His feedback is mostly good. I'm going to put his username on screen and a bit of a warning to everybody to say his strings are not legitimate. If you do like D'Addario strings like I do, please make sure that you're getting the right stuff. If you are buying strings online, your best bet is to get them from a store that sells them on eBay. Don't go through some of these individual sellers who are claiming to have strings for, say, up to about $10 less than what everyone else is selling them for. If they are selling them for even $10 less than what the other sellers are, odds are they're not legitimate. There might be some exceptions there, but trust me, my friend has just lodged a dispute on eBay. I'll put all of the details of the seller on screen right now, as well as in the description. Don't go harassing him. Just make sure people see this as a warning. Especially if you're in Australia, please make sure you share this video around. One of the huge giveaways was as my friend was stringing his guitar, he ran his finger down one of the wound strings and it caught on his skin. That is so bad. These strings are absolute garbage. These aren't legitimate D'Addarios. If you're shopping on eBay Australia, please share this with your friends, anyone who's a guitar player, because you want to stay well away from this guy's stuff. His cables look like junk. He sells a lot of cheap and nasty copies of things that aren't legitimate. And his strings, while they are boxed, he got boxes printed. So stay very, very clear of this seller. So I hope that's helpful. Please share it around. Get the word out. These guys shouldn't be allowed on eBay. All right, this is a little bit of a shock. Fender, believe it or not, are discontinuing. Well, what are they discontinuing? What? Their American Standard Stratocaster, their American Standard Strats will be no longer. How do I know this? I've had about 10 people email me and message me and also bring up on live streams that this is happening. And I was a little shocked. I was like, how can they do that? I'm not too sure what's going on. So they're going to start a new series of guitars, which will be slightly different. I don't know the specs right now, but I just want to fill everybody in that this is happening. And if you're not sure, this email is going around from shops who are basically offloading a lot of their old switches, a lot of their old necks, and all that kind of stuff that would work for the American series guitars. They still will make guitars in the US, of course. There is a new series replacing them, but from what I hear, the radius or compound radius is different on the neck. There's going to be a few adjustments. Odds are they're going to be a little bit more expensive through what I've heard through rumor. This could be a rebranding or just sort of some gimmick to get people talking about their new guitars, which are coming out. To be honest, the Strats have been pretty similar the last 10 years. There's not a whole lot with the American series that have changed, other than the fact that they've tried a couple of different tone pots and the variations in pickups, but they've been pretty much the same. So it'd be great to see some variation in the guitars, although a lot of people won't like this idea. I'm sort of keen to see what they come out with. If you had your heart set on buying a current series American Fender Strat, I guess right now is the time to do it. For me, I play a Mexican one and I absolutely love it. But I've had a deluxe Strat and what can I say? Tonally, there's not a whole lot in it to me, but feel-wise is where it's at. And if you're in love with a guitar you don't yet have, maybe jump on it because it might not be around in the near future. I'll post more on a future podcast once I know a little bit more about this. I'd like to thank everybody for sending me the information and emails regarding this discontinuation of their Fender Strats. So yeah, crazy, huh? It's just the American series Strats, by the way, not the entire range. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening to the In the Blues Tone podcast. I endeavor to do more of these coming up in the future. It has been a little while since I've done one, and I had a lot on my plate the last few months, and I absolutely apologize for not getting one out sooner. Sometimes there's not a lot to talk about in terms of what's going on and important information, you know, like the eBay seller and all that kind of stuff. So I only do podcasts when I've really got something to say. And I appreciate everybody who listens to the podcast. And if you do like it and you know some guitar friends, please share it around. It's important to get it out there. And the more people listening, the more the show can take off. I'd also like to interview a few more people on the podcast, as I always mention. So if you have someone in mind for me to interview that's relatively easy to access, then please let me know and I'll get onto them. We can have a chat about anything, any topic guitar related or music related is cool with me. So thanks again for listening. My name's Shane. I'll catch you all soon. See ya.